5 AM. If everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're going to start this morning with public comment period. Time on the agenda. Anybody can address this board on any issue that is not on today's agenda. I have no formal request to speak, but does anybody like to comment on anything that is not on today's agenda? Seeing none, I'll move to consent calendar. Any supervisor have anything they'd like to pull today? Supervisor Withrow?
I think we're going to pull B12 and talk about it a little bit.
Okay. Any other item from the board? Okay, at this time, anybody in the audience wish to speak on any item on consent calendar, and I'll start with our clerk, recorder, registrar of voters, Lee Lungergan. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, everyone. I have an opportunity to speak to you today about the statement of the vote from our last election, and thank you for taking me off of the consent calendar and giving me a moment to talk to you about it. I just wanted to indicate that the statement of the vote, we had 31.66% of our voters voting in this election. The last election of the same caliber was in the 40% range. So this was not a very big turnout for Stanislaus County. And that's really unfortunate. We like to see as many people turn out as absolutely possible. The statement of the vote is before you, and the only local race on that would be that of supervisor for the 4th district that was a race. And so congratulations to Jim DeMartini for winning that and coming in ahead on that race. The other things I wanted to mention to you is we have a new opportunity to save some money for Stanislaus County. It's called the opt-in to the e-sample ballot. And that was placed in everybody's sample ballot pamphlet, allowing anyone who wishes to go ahead and sign up to get their sample ballot online. They cannot vote online, but they can certainly read the sample ballot pamphlet, which costs us approximately $1 a piece. So with our 220,000 to 30,000 voters, that would be quite the savings if a number of them would sign up for it. So we'd love to see that. If you're out there listening, folks, sign up for it. Registration, our registration numbers continue to go up, and I will give you just a real brief snapshot. We currently have active voters, 220,222, and that is up to today's date. Republicans are 84,577. Democrats are 90,438. And the next largest group is no party preference, which used to be called decline to state. And that number is 34,855. That is a very large number. And we don't know at any time which way they're going to be voting. So oftentimes we would have to have extra ballots available for them, depending on which party they wish to vote for. So that can be pretty interesting. Just a real brief update on the top two primary. The top two primary was successful. The logic and accuracy testing did cost us more money for this. We had to have two extra people at the warehouse, and the logic and accuracy testing of the in-house 650 tabulators was almost an additional week's worth of time. So it was quite a bit more expensive. In addition to that, the impact that we're hearing on candidates is that candidates now are running, for example, if you have a two-year term, you're almost running for office a year and a half of that term because they're running hard for the June and the November election instead of just the November election. So I think the people of California have lost something in this as well as have gained something. And what they've lost is the focus of their legislators and their elected officials in the two-year term spots because they're now focusing so much on running for office again. That's just a quick little briefie on that information. The last thing I'd like to just mention is that Patrick Kavanaugh, who is our assistant registrar of voters, begins work at the CEO's office in July. They have hired him away. I just would mention this is the second time the assistant registrar of voters has been hired by the CEO's office, and we're delighted to support you with such great staff. So Patrick is here today. Hop up, Patrick. And he will be starting there in July. finally, I would like to thank this board and specifically Terry Withrow as a board member who stayed with us on election night. He went to the warehouse. He was all over being an observer on your behalf, and I think he did a terrific job along with the other observers that we had from a whole variety of parties and people across our community. So thank you. Is there any questions?
I do have one question on that opt-in on the e-sample ballot.
Yes.
Is that something to be signed up online? Can we do something on your website that can get people to sign up for it?
Yes. Thank you for that lead-in. Yes, it is a sign-up online, and you would just go to stanvote.com. You'd be able to sign up right online, put your information in. It's totally confidential. No one's going to see the information that you place in there, and then you would be able to sign up and get your ballot. We are also sending people, it's important that we have an email address because we're going to be sending out email notices. Say your whole family decides to get an e-sample ballot pamphlet. How are you going to know when they come out? You'll get an email that says they're online and available now. What we are suggesting is, say you have a family of from 2 to 5 or 10 people in your family. If you get one hardbound sample ballot pamphlet and the rest of the family signs up for e-sample ballot pamphlet, that is going to be a huge savings. Plus, you're going to get the hard copy right there, and if you don't check your emails, you're going to know it's time to vote. So that would be very, very helpful as well.
Very good. Any other questions of our Supervisor DeMartini?
And then Lee, you said with the top two primary that it was more expense for you to tabulate the results, and I've not heard that before.
It was not, I apologize, not tabulate the results, complete the logic and accuracy testing. Because before the logic and accuracy testing, we give each individual person on the ballot, each candidate, a number. And they get one vote, two votes, three votes, all the way down. When you have that, you run the whole test deck through the machines, and then you have a pre-designated result. So you should have the exact same result of how you marked the test decks. That way we can tell the machines are working properly and the equipment is tabulating properly. In this specific instance, I'm not sure of the exact number, but I think we had in the range of 25, 30, 24? 24 people were running for United States Senate. So the test deck, instead of being a small little bit of paper, became larger than the number of ballots that we ran through for the election.
Oh, okay. It was the U.S. Senate that caused the extra.
Correct.
But as far as the Assembly and the State Senate?
They did not cost us any additional, but the Senate.
Okay, that's what I didn't understand. I couldn't understand why it was more. Okay.
And every single ballot had the Senate on it, all of them. So it was really lengthy.
Okay. I understand that.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments?
I just want to congratulate you, Lee, on what you're doing there. First time I've ever been back on that side of it, and you just run a really tight ship. You do a great job there, and I was very impressed on what you're doing. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
And on behalf of my staff, who is actually doing all the work, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Are you going to vote?
We'll do consent. I got to ask anybody else wants to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Lee.
I was going to hang out.
Anybody else in the audience wish to comment on this agenda item or any other consent calendar item except for item B12? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for consent calendar less item B12.
Motion to approve.
I have a motion.
A second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. Okay. Being that we're past the time of 9:05, I'm going to move to the 9:05 hearing. Public hearing to consider adjustments to the Stanislaus County franchise maximum rates for solid waste collection services. Good morning.
Good morning. Here we go. Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, board members, CEO Nino, Jamie Yeagers, interim director of the Department of Environmental Resources. And we're here first up this morning to talk about proposed refuse collection rates for the coming year. First thing that we'd like to do is show you a map of the various franchise areas and the communities that each of these areas serve. And with that, we'll lead into the discussion. There's a mixture of residential, commercial, and Dropbox customers within each of the franchise areas. And in a franchise system, the haulers receive the exclusive right to the residential and commercial accounts in their areas in exchange for a franchise fee. In turn, the county retains the ability to regulate the haulers and set the maximum rates that can be charged. The board also sets the franchise maximum hauler rates for Dropbox customers. By way of background, in 2008, staff worked with the firm of Hilton, Farnkopf, and Hobson, as well as the franchise company, to develop a new base rate system for refuse collection. In November of that year, this board adopted the new base rates, which set a benchmark to set rates beginning July 1 of 2009. At the same meeting, the board also adopted a new methodology for the annual adjustments to these rates. And once base rates are set for 4 consecutive years, the rates then may only go up or down by the change in a series of price indexes, and we have had rate decreases in the recent past. Currently, we're in the 4th year of the index-based adjustments. Franchise Area 3 was put out to a competitive bid in 2008, and in August of 2009, this board approved the award of that franchise area to Trilux Scavenger. The approved maximum rates for Area 3 were set to remain constant through June 30th of this month, and that was to fold them into the rate methodology process. Therefore, this will be the first time that we are considering index-based adjustments for Franchise Area 3 for the coming year. The rate adjustment methodology is made up of a series of different components. First is a labor component, and for this current year, it has increased by 3.3%. Also a fuel component, which has increased substantially, nearly 25%, a collections component, which has increased 3.1%, no change to the interest component or the tipping fee at the Fincode landfill, so those are both zero for this period. The next substantial increase is the waste energy disposal component, which increased 39.29%. The transfer component, there was no change this year, and no change to other fees, but always the franchise fee component is adjusted up or down so as to exactly equal the franchise fee. So all of that rolls into how the rates turn out, and for the residential category this time, we have nearly a little over 24,000 subscribers to weekly service. And roughly half of those will see a 10.12% increase. Also, nearly half will see a 12.1% to a 12.5% increase. And 6% will see about an 8% increase. The 90-gallon cart is the most common service in the residential sector. And so we've depicted those rates for the various companies here in this slide. And it shows both the current rate and the proposed rate with the adjustment factors. And we have one more slide to show you in a little bit greater detail how the various components make up the change to the residential rates. And so you can see that the real driving factor this time is the waste to energy disposal component charge. And originally we had projected that component alone would increase rates somewhere between 50 cents to $1.50 per household per month. When we actually had the final numbers on the high end, it turned out to be $1.85 for that component. So we estimated a little bit low, but this allows you to see how the various components roll up to the actual rate changes. Moving on to the commercial sector, we have just over 2,800 commercial bin services currently, and the breakdowns and percentages are similar for the commercial sector and the residential sector, roughly half will see nearly 10% increase. Another almost half will see an 11.6 to an 11.7% increase, and 14% will see a 9% increase. The most common service in the commercial sector is a two-yard bin collected once per week. And this slide, similar to the residential slide, shows the current and proposed rate adjustments. And the range increases from about $6.50 a month on the low end to $8.32 a month on the high end. Moving on to the Dropbox category. Service in this category is on an as-needed basis, and the board only establishes the hall charge. The hall charges in this case are going up between 4.29% to a maximum of 5%. The 5%, the rate is capped at 5% when the factors are something that can be controlled, and in the case of Dropbox customers, the waste energy component is not part of that formula because we're only setting the hall charge. Everything else in that category is basically negotiable between the customer and the hauler. Dropbox sizes can range from 10 yards on the low end to 30 yards on the high end, but what we've used is the 20 to 29 yard category in this slide. And similar to the commercial bin rate increases, the hall charges are going to increase from about $8 on the low end to just under $10 on the high end. And we wanted to take this opportunity to brief you on a new mandate, another new mandate, an unfunded mandate, that has come about as a result of Assembly Bill 341 signed last fall into law. And basically, it requires that local jurisdictions have to implement a commercial recycling program by July 1st of this year. And we have to do that by educating the public, performing outreach, and doing monitoring of the various efforts, basically surveying and tallying the information for the population that's affected. Who's affected by the change? Basically, all businesses that generate 4 cubic yards or more of waste per week, and multifamily communities with 5 or more units. So what do the folks that are impacted by this have to do? They have to subscribe to a recycling collection service, or they can send materials to a mixed waste processing facility, but unfortunately in Stanislaus County we don't have one of those. So their only other option is to self-haul the recycling materials to a location of their choice. Now, in trying to determine how to implement this new program, we had a series of meetings over the past year with our haulers and the local cities. And consistent with current practice, what we decided to recommend was that the haulers offer and continue to offer commercial recycling services in their respective areas at a charge reasonable to the market-based rate on the value of the material being collected. And we thought that this approach would impact the businesses as well as department staff the least while complying with the new mandates. So basically the department has established educational materials, survey forms, and outreach efforts, outreach information, and we're going to utilize the haulers to distribute that information to customers, and we're going to be sharing it with our partner cities so that they can duplicate those materials and streamline all of the efforts to comply. So that brings us to our staff recommendation for today, which is to approve the recommended adjustments to the Stanislaus County franchise maximum rates for refuse collection service areas 1, 2, 3, and 4. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from board members? Seeing none, this is a public hearing. I'm going to open the public hearing on this item and ask if anybody would like to speak on this item. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the board. Any questions or comments or a motion?
I guess I'll comment really quickly that I do like the way we figure this every, when we look at this yearly, it makes a lot of sense. It takes a lot of the guesswork. It takes a lot of the criticism out of it. And to point out again, this is the waste energy is making up the majority of this increase. And we'll be taking that up during Covantes. So with that, I will make a motion to approve.
Okay. There's a motion. And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. 9-10, public hearing. A public hearing to consider to adopt a resolution approving the reversion to acreage of the Del Rio Lago subdivision final map.
Thank you, and good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doring. I'm Matt Machado, Director of Public Works. And to begin with, I wanted to share out that last week we received a letter from George Petrolakis representing the landowner, Bank of Stockton, requesting a 30-day continuance on this public hearing. The purpose of that continuance would be to develop a subdivision improvement agreement, which would include a form of security and insurance. Staff fully supports this concept to develop the security and SIA. Mr. Petrolakis is in the audience today. So to begin with, I'd wanted to ask the board to consider this continuance. And as I said, George is here, and I can answer any questions that you may have. So I'd like to turn it back to the board for consideration of continuance.
Okay. And because this is a published public hearing, I'm going to open the public hearing to receive comments on either the extension or if anybody has comments on the actual agenda item.
Chairman O'Brien and honorable supervisors, my name is George Petrolakis, Petrolakis Law and Advocacy, 1130 12th Street here in downtown Modesto. I don't have a lot to add to my letter requesting the continuance or to Public Works Director Machado's presentation. We need the 30 days to work out the details of the necessary documentation for the replacement improvement security and subdivision improvement agreement. And we've had some initial discussions that have been very productive. I think really all the issues are resolved. It's a matter of getting them down on paper for your later review. I did want to thank the staff again, Public Works Director Matt Machado, Planning and Community Development Director Angela Freitas, and even the lawyers, Deputy County Counsel Tom Bowes and County Counsel Doring. Everybody's been very helpful and willing to get the replacement security in place to keep the project moving ever so slowly.
Very good.
Any questions, Renee?
Any questions? Thank you. Anybody else wish to comment on either the continuance or actual comments on the original agenda item? Not, I'm going to bring it back to the board to seek direction on continuing the public hearing. And do we have a date-specific time that we would rehear this or continue this to?
Yes, on July 24th at 9:10 a.m.
Okay. So looking to the board to see if they're willing to continue this to July 24th at 9:10 a.m.
I move that we extend if currently is proper this time.
Okay. Have a motion?
That's a motion, yes.
And I will second that.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. So this public hearing will be continued to July 24th, 9:10 a.m.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we'll go back to the agenda and start with the item we pulled off the consent calendar, item B12, approval to enter into a new provider agreement with Doctors Medical Center for fee for service inpatient psychiatric services for fiscal year 12-13.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Patty Gil Thomas with me is Cynthia Tomlinson, and in the audience is Linda Down, Assistant Director of Behavioral Health. We did prepare a short PowerPoint this morning that we'd like to present and answer any questions that you may have on this matter. So we're going to bring it up now. We're pleased to bring you, after quite a bit of work on our part and our partner, Doctors Medical Center's part, an extended and new renewed provider agreement for inpatient services. A little bit about the history of inpatient health services. It's important to remember and note that we are very grateful and fortunate in this community to have a psychiatric inpatient hospital. Most communities, particularly in the central portion of California, don't have that kind of urgently needed resource in their communities. The county, this was originally a private hospital. The county purchased it in 1994. It was renamed to Stanislaus Behavioral Health. When the county hospital closed in 97, began some licensure issues. Those licensure issues drew us to seek a relief from the federal government as a county organization and as a private hospital. Because of federal regulation changes that regarded licensure and reimbursement, the county repurchased or sold the behavioral health hospital back to Doctors Medical Center. And we contracted to reserve a portion of the 67-bed facility. In 2010, as a result of mediation between the parties, the county and DNC agreed to implement a new provider agreement, and our recommendation today is to extend that provider agreement at current rates recommended in the report. Our current agreement expires at the end of this June 2012. As your board is aware, there has been a growing number of people in our community who need psychiatric inpatient care. We have historically averaged 19 individuals a day, and in recent months, as we've reported to you in a variety of budget reports, that census of county patients who are either Medi-Cal or uninsured, and when they're uninsured, they're completely responsible of the county, has been running over 40 a day, and the psychiatric hospital has been at capacity for months. There is, like in many other parts of our health care system, a significant underfunding or inadequate funding for psychiatric inpatient care, and as your board is also aware, for a good portion of the current fiscal year, and we expect through next year, savings from other programs will be used to fund the increased cost of hospitalization. Despite those increased costs, we believe it is appropriate and fair for there to be a rate increase in the agreement that we've recommended to you today. The county and the DMC team, and I do call them a team, have come together in a very collaborative way for most of this past year, working on a strategic plan that we hope to bring to your board this August. The key factors of that strategic plan were to develop the new agreement that's before you, the first piece today, to develop a strategic plan for the provision of 24-hour-a-day, 7-days-a-week secure mental health services. In the new one-year agreement before you and in the strategic planning that we're nearing the end of, not only on behalf of the county and Doctors Medical Center and Doctors Behavioral Health Center, but now including all of the county's hospitals participating in our strategic plan effort, there is clearly a demonstrated need to create a continuum of care and to create a lower level of care, psychiatric inpatient facility being the highest level of care, creating a lower level of care called a psychiatric health facility, or commonly referred to as a PUF. But that won't be enough of a solution for this community's needs. So this strategic planning team is focused on developing a much broader continuum of care, again, including the hospitals. At this point, everyone agrees on the need to add a psychiatric health facility, but everybody realizes that simply adding 16 beds to a system that is terribly strained and overloaded won't be a comprehensive solution. The renewal before you today has an increase from $974 to $1031 per day of a rate reimbursement to the Behavioral Health Hospital, $334 for authorized Medi-Cal administrative days. The rate increase is about the equivalent of the last 2 years' cost of living, and we think appropriate. For the county's uninsured patients, for the first time we're recommending a case rate for 3 days or less. That's the equivalent of $828 a day. The significance of this rate is that it guarantees a better, improved revenue stream to keep the hospital open. And it gives the county some assurance of what its cost will be on a case rate basis. The per diem rate will kick in after that additional fourth day. There are recommendations for restoration of competency. These are patients that need to be presented to court, and those recommendations are included in the new agreement. The full estimated cost, if every day were authorized for payment and the facility were to be full, would be $7.3 million next year, funded by state Medi-Cal, by realignment, and 31% of it by departmental fund balance. And that's what's concerning to us, because we do not want to use all of our past accumulated savings or essentially have a deficit in this operation. So that's another reason we're looking for alternatives. The agreement before you today, if fully occupied and all claims paid, would be an increase between $1.2 and $1.7 million. We have several recommendations before you today. They are to authorize the CEO and the Director of Behavioral Health to negotiate and execute the agreement. That work is done, and the agreement is in your agenda packet for next year, and authorize the signature of such. We would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions?
Patty, thanks for doing this. Just a couple questions. And first of all, the bill review issue that was happening a year or so ago, involving denial of claims by doctors, how's that all working out?
I think it couldn't be better now. I think that there is a new collaboration between the parties focused on our mutual success. And again, how grateful the county is to have that kind of resource in the community. It's a very complicated process, and I'm not an expert. Ms. Downs is, our director and our staff are, but there is a required level of documentation for each claim submitted. And then because the behavioral health director in each county has the responsibility to review and approve the claims, that level of scrutiny really requires and encourages the county and Doctors Behavioral Health Center to work together to make sure each claim is correct. The denial rate is lower than it's ever been right now. The average we're looking at, Cynthia put this together last night, the number of days and the denials, we're at 13%, which could be as low as it is anywhere in the state. I can't verify that, but over these years where we've looked at this denial of claim rate, we've also looked at what other private hospitals do and what their experiences with state and other counties are. That's a dramatic increase. It's been cut by more than half in this last year. And we continue to work on ways to partner to make sure that all the appropriate expenses are indeed reimbursed.
Okay, that's great. So I think before the concern was it was one of the highest ones that doctors had, I think, and now it sounds like we're back where we should be, hopefully, with by working together. Great. Couple more things. The fund balance, department fund balance. We talk about 2 years when we're going to deplete that. If I understood that right, you said about 31% of this $7 million, so over $2 million, is coming out of departmental fund balance. So we've got maybe $6 million in there. I'm just trying to guess what the fund balance number is. So we're going to be down in 2 more years. We would deplete that. Is that right?
We believe within 2 years, if we don't interject some new solutions into the fact that so many people, an increasing number of people, need secure 24/7 mental health services, that we could deplete that. The average reimbursement rate for a PUF bed, a psychiatric health facility, is around 626 versus the 1,031 rate. And it really is sort of a step down. And in our healthcare system and in our mental health care system, we need to have the same kind of options where people are placed, you know, at the level appropriate for the care that they need. And so that will help. But by law, a psychiatric health facility, regardless of where it's located, can only be limited to 16 beds. And when you look and when you see the strategic plan that we'll bring forward, our consultants have looked across California and across the nation. And the reality is there's a troubling and dramatic increase in the demand for secure 24/7 beds for people with mental health issues. It's not a Stanislaus County issue or phenomenon. And so we're talking with all the hospitals about what to do in the emergency rooms. The behavioral health director and her staff have been phenomenal. Just in the last 2 months, they've begun training licensed social workers in our emergency rooms to help unclog that part of the system. But the outpatient and the other alcohol and drug-related treatment programs are all part of a big continuum. And this is the first time that our county will have a strategic plan that looks at the whole, not just what we need to do when people require hospitalization.
Okay. Just for my own purposes, acute versus a lower level, just kind of a high level, what's the difference? I mean,
you can tell I'm not a clinician, but I'll give you a very thumbnail layperson sketch, and that is that people require the highest level of care. Doctors Behavioral Health Center that is located at Claus and Briggsmore is really just like a wing of Doctors Medical Center. It's an acute care hospital. A psychiatric health facility is not. And Linda, do you want to add to that?
Good morning. An acute care facility is required to be linked, as Patty mentioned, to a hospital. So it pretty much is diagnosis driven. Those who have a higher diagnosis, psychotic, schizophrenia, and so forth like that, would be an acute care facility. A PUF is a lower level of care. It's not required to have that immediate connection to a hospital facility. So your folks that have a lower diagnosis, a more manageable, less acute type of psychiatric illness would be placed in a PUF.
Okay, great. Thank you. A couple more. Sorry. Merced, San Joaquin County, those are PUFs there, the Psychiatric Health Facility.
Yes, PHF.
Are they county-run or are they run private? Are they privately?
You know, I believe that the San Joaquin is county-run, and I understand that they have reduced the number of beds they have in their PUF recently. Madeline Scheffler and I have a conference call scheduled with the San Joaquin County officials coming up here in a couple of weeks to discuss what opportunities there are there.
Okay.
Both facilities are county run, and San Joaquin was a 40-bed PUF that recently went down to 16 beds, which enables them to then bill Medi-Cal for those clients.
Okay. The original agreement with doctors back when we sold this, was for 35 beds, and we're down to 25 beds now. I just wondered why.
It's a reservation. It was never a guarantee, and it was really, when we went to the 35 beds and the mediation process, because the parties had some disputes over the original agreement. It was really a forecast about what the level of county patients who would be uninsured or covered by Medi-Cal might be compared to the whole census. That whole capacity is 67, and it's full. So it's full of other patients. It's full of private pay patients. And they also take desperately other counties that don't have a psychiatric inpatient facility in their community, also place there upon availability. We look forward to trying some of these other solutions even in the next year and hoping that we can minimize some of the cost, because there's a demand for those hospital beds. And indeed, the hospital, and I don't want to speak on their behalf, but as they've explained to us, they want to maximize their opportunities too to cover their costs with other patient pay.
Okay, great. And I know this agenda item was just about this current contract, one-year contract, but as we talked about the PUF stuff, I kind of wanted to just hit these just a little bit because I know it's coming. And I just concerned and want to make sure that we really are looking at all the options here. You know, if we go back to the history of this, you know, we bought this in 94, we sold it in 2007, now we're thinking about starting one up here again, in essence. I know it's going to be a PUF, I know, compared to... So I just would like us to move slowly and totally inform us as we move through this process to make sure that we are looking at all the different possibilities compared to us getting back into this business in essence again and spending this money. Another question I just thought of was the money from the sale originally, is that solely designated to be used for... And something like it can't be used for any other type of facility.
We have designated in the county treasury, and it's totally under the control only of the Board of Supervisors. It's set aside for reinvestment in the system, and it is not being used for this operating deficit.
Okay.
And so it's set aside. I want to be really clear. We're not proposing in any part of the work we're doing, which is very methodical and very slow. I want to assure you, and we'll do our very best to keep you informed. We're not ever proposing to get into the psychiatric inpatient business. As a county government, we would not be eligible for provider-based reimbursement, and we could not afford to do that, and the private sector is doing a great job. What we can do as a county, California county, and to receive Medi-Cal reimbursement is operate a PUF. And even in that regard, and we would not envision that it would be operated by county employees, but perhaps more likely by a contract with a provider.
Okay, good.
Minimize the exposure and make sure that we have lots of options.
Perfect. Keep us posted here. Thank you very much.
Good. Any other question by board members?
Yeah, one question. Is the
Do we know how many, what percentage of the patients that end up in the psychiatric facility could have went to the PUF, could have avoided? We don't keep those numbers, or the MC doesn't.
We talked about it. Do we have a number?
You know, we know that right now, and we can look, and we have with Doctors Medical Center, looked at the average length of stay. In the last year, I believe 21 or 22% of the average admittance were for 24 hours or less. Okay. In other words, there was no place else for those people to go. They presented an immediate appearance of a danger or crisis, danger to themselves, danger to someone else. They hadn't been involved in a crime, so they're not in the jail, because many of these people are in the jail as well. And when somebody got to see them and, you know, review their situation, they were immediately discharged or within a 24-hour period. That's not a good thing, because that's a psychiatric inpatient hospital. It's the highest level of care. And so we know that tells us, and our team, our DMC team, and our county team are very focused on what to do for those kinds of solutions, what to do on the front end. This is a huge issue for law enforcement. It's a huge issue for the emergency rooms throughout this county. We've had a manual in the room with us, and we're in our strategic plan, and the hospitals have all agreed to form a collaborative approach to attacking these problems over not just a one-time strategic plan, but ongoing. We know that Emmanuel really suffers from patients from Merced County, for which Merced County takes no responsibility when they show up and present at the Emmanuel emergency room. We know that each of the hospitals, there's not one in our community, is impacted in their emergency rooms right now by this situation, and we need a solution that's broader than just having a hospital or a PUF. And so we know that we're short on resources, and there's a lot of money being spent that perhaps could be redirected to a better level of service at a lower cost.
And if we did a PUF, if it comes to fruition and we fill the 16 beds every single day, can a private provider also provide a PUF? 16?
Yes.
As long as the county only has 16 beds, that's what we're going to be. It's going to be our maximum.
16 is the Medi-Cal limit, so you can't, for example, as Linda mentioned, San Joaquin had 40 beds. And they needed 40 beds. There's no question that there wasn't a decline in their demand, but they couldn't get Medi-Cal reimbursement if the facility operated over 16.
But there are
private PUFs as well.
You still get reimbursement for 16 even if you exceed that number. You don't get full 16.
You cannot have greater than 16 beds to receive Medi-Cal reimbursement for a PUF in one operation. You cannot.
Now I got to ask the simple question: if it's cheaper to put someone rather than put them in the acute facility, if it's cheaper, if it runs $200 a day instead of $300 a day, why would Medi-Cal not reimburse you above 16 if there's a need? Because the larger counties, higher population, it's obvious that there's more need.
It's a licensing issue. Anything over 16 beds is considered a freestanding hospital, and there are separate rulings. So by law, for regulations, it's anywhere from 1 to 16 beds is considered a psychiatric health facility. Anything over that is a freestanding hospital, and you cannot serve or cannot bill for adults ages 22 to 65 in a freestanding hospital.
So, on your question, Vito, did I understand it right? You could have multiple PUFs in one county. Is that right? You could have certain...
Kern County had two PUFs, currently has two PUFs operated by two separate entities. Mm-hmm. They have an 8-bed PUF and a 10-bed PUF, so yes, you can have more than one PUF in one county.
Okay.
And Linda and Patricia, with the consideration of this board's the new per diem rate, that'll essentially be the same rate that gets charged to patients who come from other counties, which will also assist DBHC in meeting their operating costs.
Exactly. The 1031 daily rate, as I mentioned earlier, is both the rates are improvement of revenue and reimbursement to the hospital appropriately so, but that 1031 per day rate will be paid by any other county that has a placement in the psychiatric hospital.
And I have to ask that question. You had mentioned that Merced County residents end up at...
They do.
At Emmanuel, is it your physical address or the location of when you're... essentially, if you're a 5150 or...
What Emmanuel has expressed to us is it's where the ambulance brings them because they are the closest hospital in that vicinity. So what Merced's interpretation of those laws are is the uninsured folks are in physically in Stanislaus County in a Stanislaus County facility, therefore they're Stanislaus County's responsibility. So they're interpreting it as the physical location of the person.
We've just begun this dialogue with Emmanuel at all the hospitals. It really has come together trying to work on solutions, and we've offered as well to engage in conversations with other counties, because this is a disease that, again, like crime or anything else that we respond to, doesn't see those governmental boundaries of counties or cities or regions. And this entire area, this entire region, is really underserved for secure mental health services, for drug and alcohol programs, and it is blind to those jurisdictional city and county lines. So we're starting here in our region, but this is something that we're not going to simply bring you a plan and then walk away. This is going to take a great deal of collaboration over the coming years to try to get ahead of this kind of disease and problem in our community.
I know that the Community Corrections Partnership has put a lot of money towards mental health services, and I'm sure we haven't even seen the tip of the realignment iceberg here that's headed our way on the mental health issue. So thank you very much.
Any other questions? At this time, anybody in the audience wish to comment on this agenda item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for action.
I'll make a motion we approve B12.
I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Item B13, approval to amend agreement with Stearns, Conrad, and Schmidt Consulting Engineers for environmental monitoring, testing, and reporting services at the Fink Road and Gear Road landfills.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, board members, CEO Nino, County Council Doring, Jamie Eggers again, Interim Director of Department of Environmental Resources, and I apologize, I neglected earlier to introduce Mandeep Dillon. He's our Solid Waste Program Manager, and since he's here for multiple agenda items today, he's going to assist me on this one and the next item as well. So this item is to consider amending the master agreement with SCS Engineers. And by way of background, the Department of Environmental Resources, specifically our landfill division, maintains and operates the Fink Road and Gear Road landfills. At both of these sites, however, we need outside expertise and services for environmental monitoring, testing, and reporting. Through a competitive procurement process, SCS was awarded a contract for these specialized services back in August of 2007. And with the extensions that were granted, the contract expires June 30th of this month. That originally was a 3-year contract with 2 1-year extensions that were granted. In August of 2011, this board amended the agreement with SCS by removing the landfill gas-related tasks at the Gear Road landfill and instead contracted with a firm called Tetra Tech BAS. I hear more about this in a related item and the next agenda item. Since August of 2011, SCS has continued to maintain the groundwater extraction and treatment system at Gear and perform the needed environmental services at Fink Road. Most recently, the contract was amended on April 3rd of 2012 to provide additional funding for some new requirements brought about by, one, the greenhouse gas legislation, which has come into effect, and the cease and desist order that was issued in April 2011 by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. This amendment covered services needed through June 30th. At this time, staff recommends a one-time 6-month extension to the contract end date to December 31st of 2012. And this would be to continue the routine services only. It would not be a duplication of the action this board took on April 3rd. And SCS has indicated that they're willing to hold their existing pricing throughout this period. This extension to December 31st would align the contract end date with the same deadline in the cease and desist order, and it would benefit the county in the following ways. We would maintain consistency throughout the cease and desist order compliance period. It would provide the maximum assurance to us that all deadlines would be met, and it's my personal feeling that changing consultants midstream during this process would be somewhat risky. And it would provide us sufficient time to negotiate a new contract and transition for the provision of those services. Department staff with the assistance of GSA Purchasing Division has issued two RFPs for our environmental services at the landfills, one each for Fink Road and one for Gear. And those went out on the street on May 25th. The pre-conference proposals were held last week, and the closing date is set for August 16th. We anticipate the contract award will take place in either late September or early October with an effective date of January 1. The staff recommendation before you today is to approve amending the master agreement with SCS Engineers for professional services at the Fink Road and Gear Road landfills through December 31st of 2012. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Are there any questions of staff? Seeing none, I'll ask audience members if they have any comments on item B13. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. I would absolutely agree that to change this point with 6 months left in the cease and desist would be not a wise move, so I fully support this. Any action by the board?
A motion to approve the staff recommendations.
A motion?
I will second that.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Item B14, approval to amend the master agreements with Tetra Tech BAS Incorporated for professional design services at Gear Road Landfill.
Thank you. This item is very similar, but yet a little bit different, so we'll go through the background as well. This item is specific to the Gear Road Landfill only and specific to the landfill gas portion of that work. The landfill division performs routine maintenance here as well, but like we heard in the previous item, we need specialized outside services and expertise for the environmental monitoring, testing, and reporting services. The competitive procurement process back in 2007 yielded the contract to SCS Engineers, and with extensions, it expires June 30th of 2012. Here's the twist in this one. The primary reason that we hire an outside expert is to ensure that we meet all permit and statutory and regulatory requirements. Back in November of 2010, however, the county received a draft cease and desist order from the Water Quality Control Board for failure to meet some of those permit requirements. Failure to comply with the cease and desist order can bring substantial penalties. To assist the county in this process, the county retained the law firm of Myers Nave. They specialize in environmental compliance. Myers Nave in turn retained Brian A. Stewart and Associates, which we refer to as BAS, because they have extensive expertise in landfill corrective action measures. BAS's role in this process was as follows. First, to conduct a peer review of the work that SES had done for the county. Second, it was BAS's feeling that to solve our problems at the landfill, we needed to focus our efforts on landfill gas. And so their second role in this process was to provide the facts and science behind that approach to try to convince the Water Board that they were correct. And lastly, to help us gauge whether the requirements the Water Board might be imposing on the county were realistic or not. BAS's testimony at the cease and desist order hearing was pivotal. It convinced the Water Board of the need to focus our remedial efforts on controlling landfill gas as the source of contamination. Subsequent to that process, the board approved an amendment to the Myers Nave contract to allow BAS to perform additional evaluative work to develop specific recommendations for optimizing the landfill gas system. This was one of the primary directives of the cease and desist order. The next step in the process came implementation of the recommendations. And at that point, the county and the Water Board had developed a very high comfort level with the BAS firm and decided to ask SES if they would be willing to retain the BAS Field Services Division, which is called Tetra Tech BAS, as a subcontractor. That effort, however, was unsuccessful. and it led staff to recommend modifying the SES contract to remove the landfill gas tasks and contract directly with Tetra Tech for those services. County policy requires a competitive bidding process for professional services, however, statute does not. And staff felt that there were compelling reasons at that time for not bidding the landfill gas services. And those were that Tetra Tech has specialized expertise in this area. They had already done significant work on this project. They developed the recommendations and staff felt they were probably best implemented by them. An RFP would not likely have produced someone better qualified. And of course, we had the impending cease and desist order deadline. With all of that taken into consideration, this board approved entering into a master agreement with Tetra Tech BAS in August of 2011 for those landfill gas services. More recently, this board approved a contract amendment on May 22nd of 2012 to provide additional funding for work required by the cease and desist order. Most notably, that was a second phase of repairs and upgrades to the landfill gas system. Specifically, the upgrades will be to the flare station and to help us better manage our leachate. At this time, staff recommends a one-time six-month extension to this contract as well through the end of the calendar year, and that will be for the routine landfill gas services only, not duplicating the action that this board took on May 22nd, and Tetra Tech as well has agreed to hold their existing pricing through this period. Again, this extension aligns the contract end date with the cease and desist order deadline, and it will benefit the county by maintaining consistency throughout this period, providing maximum assurance that all deadlines will be met, and it will provide sufficient time to negotiate a new contract and transition for those services. The goal is to safely get to the finish line. Again, we're working with GSA Purchasing Division. Two RFPs have been issued for the environmental services on May 25th, one for each landfill. The pre-conference proposals were held last week, and we anticipate the closing date set for mid-August. Contract award will be in late September or early October. We're targeting right now sometime probably in November to bring those contracts forward to you for consideration of approval, and the effective date would be January 1, 2013. So the staff recommendation is to approve amending the master agreement with Tetra Tech BAS for professional services at the Gear Road landfill through December 31st, 2012.
Are there any questions of staff? Seeing none, I'll ask anybody in the audience if they'd wish to comment on item B14. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for action.
So move, we accept the staff recommendation.
I have a motion. Is there a second? I'll second it then. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Item B15, approval of amended and restated service agreement and an amended and restated facilities site lease agreement both with Avantis Fanasos Incorporated and an amendment to the amendment with the City of Modesto for administration of the service agreement and other related actions of the waste energy facility. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doring. My name is Stan Risen with the Chief Executive Office. And joining me at the staff table this morning, I'm pleased to have Dee Williams Ridley, Deputy City Manager for the City of Modesto. The negotiation of these contracts has been a joint effort of both the city and the county, and it's been kind of a long road getting here. I think it's been probably over 5 years in the making getting these documents to the point they are to today. And so I'd like to take a moment just to acknowledge and thank the negotiating team who has put a lot of hours in on this, it included our CEO, Monica Nino, who was involved for a while, our former Director of Environmental Resources, Sonia Herigfeld. We tried to get this through in time before she retired, but there were just too many legal language that we had to work through. We've also been assisted by Jamie Akers, our Interim Director of Environmental Resources, Mandeep Dillon, our Solid Waste Division Manager at DER, Julie Hammond, Director of Parks, Recreation, and Neighborhoods, which Solid Waste for the City of Modesto is under that division, Gloria Jenneroo, Finance Director for the City of Modesto, and Jocelyn Reed, Solid Waste Manager with the Recreations and Neighborhoods Department of the City of Modesto. We were also assisted, both the city and the county, from a legal perspective, by the firm Sidley Austin. They had Martin Gold out of New York and Eric Cashman out of Los Angeles. And then on the Covanta side of the house, we'd really like to thank Chris Baker, who is Vice President and Regional Business Manager. I don't think we could have gotten there without Chris's assistance, as well as Karen Wilhelm, Business and Accounting Manager, and Kirk Biley, Vice President and Deputy County Counsel. A little background, the waste energy facility is a mass burn, solid waste disposal, and resource recovery facility that generates electricity for sale on the market. It began operations in 1989 and burns on average about 250,000 tons of municipal solid waste per year that comes from the county unincorporated area as well as the nine cities. It has a gross electrical generation capacity of 22.5 megawatts when it's running. Unfortunately, last January, the turbine went out, and that is a major project to replace. So hopefully by towards the end of the year, that turbine will be back online generating electricity once more. But the waste energy plant is an integral part of our solid waste disposal system. And most importantly, it provides an alternative to landfill disposal. We found that the cost of creating new landfill cells is exceeding $5 million per cell. And so the ability to keep stuff out of the landfill is really important, as well as it helps us meet state law. AB 939 requires that we divert at least 50% of our waste away from the landfills and carries a threat of a $10,000 per day fine if we fail to meet this requirement. The county also leased the land to Covanta that's underneath the plant for a 35-year term with one 15-year renewal option. And at the end of the existing service agreement, which is set to expire in 2016, Covanta will actually own the improvements on the site. The facility is operated by Covanta through a contract with a joint powers agency that's comprised, as I mentioned earlier, both the City of Modesto and the county. Collectively, we're referred to as the contracting communities. It's governed by a JPA board, the Solid Waste and Energy Commission, which consists of two board members and two city council members. The original service agreement for the operation of the facility was set to expire on January 1st, 2010. Previous contract negotiations were unsuccessful, and so in 2009, the Modesto City Council and the Board of Supervisors exercised a six-year option in the agreement that allowed it to continue an additional 6 years under the existing terms. The power purchase agreement that was in place with that Covanta had in place with PG&E expired on January 1st of 2010. At that point, we began selling electricity on the market at market rates. Realizing that there were some factors that were not in our favor, we restarted contract negotiations back in 2009. That's when I became involved. And in earlier this year, January 10th, 2012, you approved a term sheet that basically created the skeleton or structure with which we went and negotiated these agreements that are here before you today. We're asking you to approve three agreements today. One is the new service agreement with Covanta. One is amended and restated lease agreement for the land underneath the facility that's between the county and Covanta, and it reflects the terms of the new deal, as well as an amendment to our JPA agreement with the City of Modesto. Our current contract, right now we receive 90% of the electrical revenue, and Covanta retains 10% of it. We also keep all disposal fees, 50% of the recycling revenue, and 30% of supplemental waste revenue. But then we pay Covanta a service fee to operate the facility, and we cover all the pass-through costs, which includes taxes, insurance, air permit fees, ash disposal. And in addition, and this is kind of the key factor, we've assumed all the risk associated with the operation of the facility. We call that risk unforeseen circumstances, but it could include major breakdowns, cap and trade costs, a number of things, and we are completely at risk for that today. And by contract, we're obligated to deliver at least 243,300 tons per year. The tip fee prior to your earlier action was set at $28 per ton, which was $22 for the waste-to-energy component, $3 a ton for AB 939, and $3 a ton for household hazardous waste. As I mentioned, when we went to selling electrical energy at market rates, we began to experience an operating loss at that point. And you can see that our resource recovery account, which is a fund that we use to track all our revenue and costs, had a balance of $19.5 million on January 1st, 2010, when the six-year option kicked in. And as of earlier this month, our resource recovery account balance was down to $10.6 million. And a lot of the operating losses are due to the plummeting electrical revenue. You can see that on this chart here. Back in January 2010, we were selling electricity at almost $60 a megawatt, which is about 6 cents a kilowatt. Last month in May, we hit kind of a new low that was just a little over $25 a megawatt, or 2.5 cents per kilowatt. One of the challenges we faced in the original negotiations was we were very focused on the revenue sharing component and trying to make sure we didn't give up too much revenue. This time around, we decided to take an objective-based approach, which I shared with you back in January, where we laid out what was it that we really wanted to accomplish. And you can see those goals up on the screen, but they included to preserve as much of that resource recovery account balance as we could, to create stable and predictable tipping fees for our customers, to make sure that we didn't end up in increased importation of waste, that we continue to meet our AB 939 requirements and preserve landfill capacity, and perhaps most importantly, that we reduce our risk exposure. With cap and trade on the horizon, representing a potential cost of $1 to $4 million a year, and other potential changes in law and major, the facilities becoming old and there's a potential for some major maintenance needs coming up, we felt it was better that we position ourselves and our taxpayers in a much less position when it comes to risk. And that's essentially what this chart is saying. There's been a major paradigm shift. We're giving up all the revenue as part of the agreements that are in front of you today, but in exchange, we've reduced our risk exposure not only down from 100% to only 25%, but then we've capped it at $3.75 million inside the contract at that. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Dee Williams Ridley, and she's going to talk about some of the highlights in the new service agreement.
Good morning. Don't think you've heard this much about garbage in a long time. Thank you, Stan. I first just want to say thank you to Stan publicly. He has been a tremendous leader in this process. We could not have done this without him. He's just been a true leader, and he's worked with us, and he's kept the ball rolling, just straight perseverance, and so thank you. So the new service agreement has a number of highlights. I'd like to take you through several of those terms. Parties have agreed to a 15-year fixed term with no renewal options, and this will take us out to about April of 2027. The contracting communities agree to pay Covanta $32 a ton with an annual CPI escalator not to exceed 20% of a rolling five-year average of all landfills within a 50-mile radius. There is a reduction in the tip fee of $2 a ton for the first 10,000 tons above the guarantee, and then $4 a ton thereafter. Tipping fees would need to increase from the current level of about $28 a ton to $38 a ton. This includes the $6 for the AB 939, household hazardous waste. And just so that you know, that our rates have been as high as $40 a ton in the past. So we're still not quite as high as we have been in the past. The Board of Supervisors, your board approved an $11 a ton increase in the tip fee in May to be effective with the start of this contract. Covanta will assume all electric, recycling, and supplemental waste revenue. They will also assume 75% of the risk of the unforeseen circumstances and 100% of normal operating risk, while the contracting communities will retain just 25% of that risk for unforeseen circumstances. Both have agreed, and we've agreed to a cap of $3.75 million. And now I see, Stan, why you asked if you wanted to navigate the PowerPoint, because I am going to be doing dual things here. Okay. Parties have also agreed that electric revenue above 82.5 megawatt in the first 4 years will be used to address cap and trade financial exposure of both parties. And then in the latter years, electric revenues reaching 92.50 a megawatt will be used to address any unforeseen circumstances costs. The contracting communities commit to delivering 243,000 tons of acceptable waste. We're currently averaging around 250,000 tons per year. Covanta will pay the $26 ton for ash disposal, as mentioned by Stan earlier, with the CPI escalator to help cover future cell development as well as gear road mitigation costs. Covanta will also bear all costs for the operation of the facility, including major maintenance, but will also enjoy all the benefits of the ownership of the facility. Covanta agrees to extend the current lease rate of, the county, I'm sorry, agrees to extend the current lease rate of $198,000 per year through the life of the new service agreement. The initial term was extended to coincide with the expiration of this new agreement. A revenue sharing agreement was also reached as it relates to any excess capacity. Covanta will serve as the marketing agent for this capacity. After payments of the reduced tip fee, revenues are shared 60% Covanta and 40% contracting communities. There's a limit of liability for either party that is set at $25 million. And then our contracting communities will have an option to purchase the facility at the end of the service agreement in 2027, and will also retain right of first refusal should Covanta offer the facility for sale to a third party. Covanta, the parent company, has also provided guarantees that the obligations of the Covanta Stanislaus Incorporated will be met. So what has changed since we were last before you? There are a number of new issues that were negotiated that were not part of the original term sheet. Language was included clarifying that the amounts spelled out for special waste are a limit and not just a processing priority. Additionally, Covanta can make capital improvements to the facility without permission. However, they are required to notify us and take into consideration our comments and concerns regarding those improvements, especially if it exceeds $500,000 in repairs or in improvements. Should the heating value change dramatically, parties have agreed to meet and confer on those impacts. In the original service agreement, the contracting communities provided security in the event of default before entering into a rate covenant, pledging all revenues and funding the resource recovery account at a minimum threshold. The new agreement is a service agreement that is more of a commercial arm's length transaction, and in the event of a default, contains provisions more typical of our standard contractual agreements or relationships. There is a $25 million limit of liability for both parties built into this agreement. Covanta has also agreed with this. We have also agreed on a one-time right to terminate this contract on December 31st of 2016 with the giving of a two-year notice if this contract is not making good business sense for Covanta. I will now turn over the presentation to Stan to discuss the new facility site lease agreement.
when we got into the facility site lease, we knew that we needed to tweak it or change it to come up with new language to reflect the new deal in the service agreement. However, as we got into the lease agreement, we realized there were a number of other areas that really needed our attention and needed some cleanup. As I mentioned earlier, the initial lease term was for 35 years and went out to August 2021 with a 15-year renewal option. We've reset the initial term now to extend it 6 years so that it expires at the same time the service agreement expires, and Covanta will still retain that 15-year option. During that period, they could either go as a merchant facility or they could renegotiate a new service agreement with us. During this service agreement period, though, we've agreed to keep the rent on the facility at $198,000 per year. If they exercise the 15-year renewal option and become a merchant facility, then that would go to market-based rent. One of our goals in doing the lease agreement was to make sure that we made any changes necessary to reflect the new deal, but we wanted to also use it as an opportunity to clean up some of the language that was in there that was needed. We found as we got into that, negotiating some of that language was becoming very burdensome and time-consuming, and so we finally came to a point where we said, okay, let's clean it up where we can both readily agree to it, but where we can't, let's just move on, because every time we were kind of asking for a concession, Covanta wanted a concession on our part in exchange, and it was starting to become burdensome to this process. So I guess that's my way of saying not everything in the lease agreement is like I would have liked to have seen it, but at some point we needed to get this deal done and keep moving. One of the things, though, that became very important to us, and I'm still back on the previous slide, D, was that we clean up some of the language as it related to decommissioning the facility and how it was going to be treated at the termination at the end of the lease. This became almost a deal breaker for me personally. I did not like the language in the original agreement, and so we spent a lot of time with Covanta and our attorneys trying to clean up this particular portion of the lease. So under the new language now, the county will have two options upon the expiration or early termination of the lease. The first option is that we can just take over the plant as is without the payment of any consideration, no cost. Or option two, we could tell Covanta you have to decommission and remove the plant. You can retain the salvage rights, but you'll have to fill in the pit with clean fill and return it to grade level. What that does mean is we'd still be leaving concrete in the ground, which wasn't exactly the most desirable, but it is a landfill facility, and it is a much better position than we were in our previous language. And most importantly, under either option we choose, Covanta is still on the hook to remove or fully remediate any contamination that they've caused, and that's backed up by a guarantee of the parent corporation. Because the new deal in the service agreement is radically different than how we've operated in the past, we also needed to come in and amend our joint powers agreement with the city of Modesto to reflect this new deal. In that amendment, the city is obligated to meet 58% of our guaranteed tonnage. The county is on the hook for 42% of that tonnage. In meeting that percentage, we've agreed to split 50-50 any waste that comes in from other cities in Stanislaus County. And that we also agree to work cooperatively to try to make sure that those cities continue to bring in their historical percentages. The amendment also spells out how revenue from the tipping fees will be allocated. It sets aside $3.75 million to deal with our risk exposure in the new service agreement, as well as another $2 million for contingencies. We've also built in a provision that if that contingency fund dips below $1 million, we'll be required to replenish it. The city will be responsible for 58%, the county 42% to bring it up to that minimum $1 million threshold. Finally, the agreement contains some meet and confer language. Should the county choose option one that I described to you earlier and become the owner of the plant, and this meet and confer language says we agree to sit down with the city and discuss if they have an interest in an ownership interest in the plant, as well as all the responsibilities that are associated with that. So
we're here. We're here to ask you to approve the amended and restated service agreement with Covanta Stanislaus effective July 1st. Authorize the Chief Executive Officer to sign the agreement to approve the amended and restated facility site lease agreement effective July 1st, 2012 as well. And authorize the CEO to sign that agreement. That you approve amendment number 3 to the JPA agreement with the City of Modesto and authorize the Chairman to sign that agreement. And finally, that you approve an increase of $32,000 in the contract with Sidley Austin for legal services in developing the new service agreement and the amended facility site lease for a revised not to exceed amount of $142,000. In conclusion, I would like to once again thank everyone who was involved in this process. It's taken us several years to negotiate the legal documents that are before you today, but we are confident that these agreements will go a long ways towards removing risk and providing stable and predictable tipping fees for years to come while minimizing the use of landfill space. This concludes our presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from board members?
I'm very much in agreement with this contract. I know you've been working on this for a long time, and it's for long-term solutions that we need. I was not really clear, though, on if the Covanta opts out in 2016, the county becomes the sole owner of the plant, and what is that what the City of Modesto wants? They no longer want to be a part owner in it?
Well, we've agreed to sit down and discuss at the time. Should that occur, should we have an opt-out in 2016, the city would like to, at that time, sit down and discuss. At this time, we're not owners. But.
Yeah, one of the things we would want to do, and thankfully we would have 2 years' notice if they choose to take what we call an off-ramp, a 2016 off-ramp, we would want to immediately call for a Phase 2 environmental assessment out there and also begin maybe hiring someone to do some due diligence from a financial perspective to determine which of those two options we would want. Obviously, because we own the land and because there's a certain amount of due diligence, it just made sense that the county would take over the plant and that you have one entity that's going to make that decision of which of those two options you're going to take. Do you want to take over the keys to the plant or do you want to just have them level the site? And so we kind of allows the county to stay in the driver's seat through that due diligence period as well as making sure everything occurs timely. And then once all that information is available, we can sit down with the city and say, okay, you know, if we choose to take over the plant, here's going to be costs associated with running it. Here's going to be decommissioning costs at the end of its life. Here's major maintenance we anticipate. And then the city could make a decision with their eyes wide open at that point.
They recall the diversion rate that the state gives us is only about 10%, isn't it?
That is correct. So no matter how much waste the city pushes through the waste energy plant, if they push through 15%, we're only getting a maximum of 10% credit towards our AB 939 goal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions? This time I'll ask the audience members if they have any comments on item B15. See, now I'll bring it back to the board. Supervisor Monteith.
Well, first of all, I want to praise the city and the county on this very difficult chore of deciding what to do. I know it's taken a number of years. I know that there has been challenges between the city and the county over this, and I want to praise you for being able to get through this and addressing the challenge. I know it hasn't been easy, but I commend you, all of you involved in this, and sometimes we're confronted with things where we don't get it our way. It's a matter of being, accept our responsibilities and then figuring out how to get it accomplished. And I do want to praise both of you, both the city and the county, in your accomplishment on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Supervisor Whitnow.
First, while we have Dee here, I want to talk to you about the green fees at Dryden. Have you got time for that?
You are so wrong for that. We don't have an audience for it.
No, I just, this is a good thing. I'm all in favor of what you guys have done here. You know, the burn rate, what we were doing with the that recovery resource account, we had to do something. And I just don't think the county, or I guess or the city for that matter, needs to be in the business of speculating in the energy markets, and I think that's what we found ourselves in. And I mean, it's great when it's going well, but then anyway, we just don't need to be in that business. So you guys have done a good job here. Just to reiterate what Dick has said, that, you know, it's been a lot of work, and I've known a lot of back and forth, and so I appreciate the effort you've done. I think this is as good agreement as we're going to get. So thanks, guys.
And I'll agree with what everybody said. First, thank you for the hard work on this. I'll have to admit I didn't like the terms as presented, but through long discussions, as we explore the alternatives, if we don't do this deal, the alternatives were risky for the taxpayers of Stanislaus County. So while on the surface it may say, why are they doing this? When you dig down to what the alternatives and options are, it would have cost the taxpayers of Modesto a whole lot more money. Excuse me, Modesto and the county, a whole lot more money. And so this is really a reduction of risk. And so I will support this today. Any other comments? Looking for a motion.
I make a motion that we accept the staff's recommendations.
There's a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you very much for all your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Okay, we're going to move down to correspondence.
This board has received a copy of the Stanislaus County Civil Grand Jury Final Report regarding the Special District Audit Requirement.
Refer to Auditor Controller.
The board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports?
Yes, I just wanted to make one comment. Yesterday, I spent the day with social services, and we went out to Pathways and other places where I was looking at the county programs that serve foster kids that were turned out because of their age. It's 18 to about 24 years old. And then my observation was that the programs that I saw seemed to be working pretty well. These kids are turned 18, they have no family support, and there is some assistance provided for them to get housing and become stable and to be a productive member of the community. They're having jobs or education, so the programs I observed, I thought were working well.
Very good. Any other board reports? Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yes. On the state budget front, Democrat lawmakers are seeking to use additional dollars from a multi-state budget settlement, a multi-state mortgage settlement to bridge the budget gap. If approved, the state would now be using between $392 and $410 million to plug the budget gap. At least 73 legal aid and housing agencies are protesting the use of these funds to balance the budget instead of mitigating home foreclosures in the state of California. The Senate Budget and Fiscal Review Committee reviewed the trailer bills yesterday. Floor votes are expected to be taken up late today. Governor Brown's deadline to sign the original budget bill is Wednesday, June 27th, 12 days after the passage of the June 15th date. On a positive note, the $250 million redevelopment agency bill looks like it has been abandoned. That had a risk to our county general fund of roughly $2.5 million. On the welfare side of things, we're looking at proposed welfare restrictions for new CalWORKs enrollees that would cut off benefits at 2 years if they did not find work. It is waived for high unemployment counties, which Stanislaus County is considered one of those. Also agreed to was a plan to shift over 880,000 low-income children in Healthy Families programs into Medi-Cal, eliminating the Healthy Families program. The county is at risk, unfortunately, of losing $511,000 in our off-highway vehicle local funding that would have been used to upgrade the water system at Frank Rains Park. A portion of the OHV funding is being transferred to cover some of the state shortfall in their parks department. We did send a letter at the end of last week to the governor addressing our concerns in this regard.
Also, Governor Brown, it's reported that he has abandoned the legislative attempt to limit the circumstances in which the courts could block the high-speed rail project under CEQA. This was an attempt to limit CEQA's impact on the priority project for the governor. He has now responded he is only delaying this request to insulate the project from some parts of CEQA, and he will wait until the legislature considers full funding of this project. On the federal side, both chambers were in session this past week and are scheduled to be in until the week of July 2nd. And that concludes the legislative report.
Very good. Thank you. There's an announcement. There's a tour of the Juvenile Commitment Center construction site following today's Board of Supervisors meeting, following our closed session, 2215 Blue Gum Avenue, Modesto, California. I'm going to do something that I normally do not do, and we had a late request for a public comment, and so I'll invite Ramon Bermudez up. But I also will admonish you, Ramon, public comments at the beginning of the meeting, and you attend plenty of government meetings to know how it works.
So, thank you very much.
All right, so go ahead, sir.
I thank you very much. Good morning, Chairman and Honorable County Supervisors, and ladies and gentlemen. I have an item that it was very important to me because while I was doing this, when I was getting ready to come over, and I had to read it over in order to present it right. It's about a soldier that died in Afghanistan last week. It's a family-loved soldier killed in Afghanistan from a woman. So it belongs to this county. Margarita Rodriguez sat in her living room on Monday, holding a photo of her son, Sergeant Jose Rodriguez. As she and other loved ones shared some of their memories of the soldier who was killed in Afghanistan last week, the 2008 Justin High School graduate, who first joined the Army in 2008 and was assigned to join base Louisville Corps near Tacoma, Washington in 2009, died after being shot while serving in Kandahar Province. The 22-year-old striker sergeant was on his second tour in Afghanistan. He was in the 4th Battalion, 23rd Infantry Regiment, and his death is the fourth fatal casualty suffered by that roughly 700-man unit since he was deployed to Kandahar Province in late April. The Tacoma News Tribune reported he had received the Army Achievement Medal and the Army Good Conduct Medal. We'll always remember him, his mother said in Spanish. His family called him a responsible, quiet, and caring man who wanted to become a firefighter after returning home. He was scheduled to come back for good next year, and his wife, Lupita Rodriguez, 19, said his wife. He died in a rural, hostile territory where American forces are trying to build confidence in the Afghan government ahead of the withdrawal of U.S. combat forces by 2014, according to the Tacoma News Tribune. Sergeant Rodriguez was supposed to be done with his military service in December 2011, but decided to extend his stay with the Army to better provide for his family, his wife said. The couple who got married in 2010 had recently had a son, Octavian, who is now 13 months old. She recalled telling her husband that he was going to miss their son's first birthday, which was on May 20th. She said, "It doesn't matter. I'll be here for all his other birthdays," she said. Lupita Rodriguez said she last heard his voice when he called her on June 13th. It never crossed her mind that it would be the last time she would talk to him. "I told him, we'll be waiting for you," she said. Still, she said she's glad that the last couple of times she talked to him, they were happy. "I could hear him actually laugh," she said. "We were happy, and he knew that we loved him." She described her husband as a great father. Lupita Rodriguez said it would be difficult to explain to their son why his father is not around as he grows older. "I will always love him," she said. "I have so many memories that I can share with my son." Of all the memories that Margarita Rodriguez has of her son, one stands out. When he was getting ready to leave for Georgia in 2008 to attend boot camp, they went to buy a bag for his clothes. He came out with a Spider-Man backpack. His mother said, I thought that he was going to give it to my little grandson before leaving. But he said, no, it's for my clothes. Lupita Rodriguez said he later used the backpack to store pins and medals that were presented to him in the army. He loved Spider-Man, she said. As the family shared the memories of Jose Rodriguez, his mother said, the reality of what happened was completely different until she had the body of her son in front of her. His remains are expected to arrive sometime after Friday, his wife said. We as veterans serve and contribute to our country proudly. I request Chairman and the Board of Supervisors to be present at his funeral. I think we all deserve the honor that this country asks from us. We all gave some. Some gave all. And Sergeant Jose Rodriguez gave all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And again, I apologize for coming a little bit late when I was due to this. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and if I'm allowed, salute the flag in honor of those veterans that have died. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ramon.
Your service.
Being that I opened up public comment, if there's anybody else who should make a public comment to this board, do so now. Seeing none, we'll move to closed session items. County Council, will you announce those, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have a conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 Subdivision A, involving two cases. The first case is Forensic Consultants Medical Group versus County of Stanislaus et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 626798. The second case is Gustavo Leal versus County of Stanislaus et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 641885. Additionally, we'll have closed session to a conference with labor negotiator. The agency negotiator is Monica Nino, and labor organizations are Stanislaus County Employees Association, ASME Local 10, and the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local 521, and the County Attorneys Association, CAA. And this will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. We do not expect to report out on any of these matters.
Okay.
We are adjourned to closed session.